This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott. And have we got a great show for you tonight? No, we don't. Damn it. The phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, East of the Rockies.
I was born with a stiff upper lip.
Brian Johnson, what a surprise. What's going on, man?
I was born with a stiff upper lip.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Elvis always did have that kind of stiff upper lip thing going on. You know, where it would curl up and looks a little bit like a sneer. I bet it drove the ladies crazy.
I was born with a stiff upper lip.
Well, you might have been born with a stiff upper lip, but I was bummed when I bought it. All right, buckle up, gang. Tonight, we've got another exciting edition of the Rock and Roll Reanimator series where we take a look at AC/DC's mediocre middle-aged misfires, ball breaker, and stiff upper lip, and try to mix them up until we make them better. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
What's up, music nerds? Are you tired of wading through a sea of mediocre music, desperately seeking to find a glimmer of greatness? You're in luck. My name is Mark, and I am the host of the podcast, Songs That Don't Suck. Each week, I scour the depths of new music playlists to unearth hidden gems that defy the trends and deliver pure sonic bliss. No matter the genre, if it doesn't suck, it's on my radar. So find us on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe today. And as always, keep searching for and listening to Songs That Don't Suck.
I'll be down as a rock.
All right, gang, just me tonight. Rico is on assignment, so we're going to bring you another exciting Rock and Roll Reanimators episode. That's right. This is the ongoing sidebar series where one of us takes a couple of records by a band that we don't feel we're quite up to their standard of excellence, and we cut at them and dissect them and take songs out and move them around and squish them together and basically take two separate records and attempt to cobble together one Frankenstein good record from two subpar records. Did I explain that okay? I don't know. I'm drinking whiskey right now, and it's about 1 o'clock in the morning. Kind of becoming a whiskey drinker. So if you hear ice, then that would be whiskey. Being very unprofessional here. So you might ask, well, Scott, what band have you selected to do a Rock and Roll Reanimators album on? And that band would be, of course, probably, honestly, if you put a gun to my head, probably my favorite band, AC/DC. AC/DC were at one time flawless to me. I looked at them, believe it or not, people who chuckle at AC/DC and their three chords and overly simple songwriting and think, how could anybody, you know, love that band? And I at one time, I couldn't find fault anywhere in anything that they did. But as I've gotten older and maybe matured a little bit, and I no longer look at things with the rose-colored glasses, if you will, always, I do find fault in their catalog, and I see missteps along the way and maybe some ill-advised decision-making, and not every song, in spite of the fact that they're all cobbled together out of the same three chords and 4/4 drum beat and a trusty pentatonic minor blues scale. Not every song is good. There are some stinkers and there are some weak moments in the catalog. And I'm going to focus specifically on the era. Let's see. I think Ball Breaker came out around 1995 and Stiff Upper Lip came out, I think, in 2001. So right there in like that 6-year window, in my opinion, was probably the lowest period for AC/DC. Now, a lot of people would say, well, Scott, you're wrong. The lowest period is actually Flick of the Switch and Fly on the Wall, and that's okay. You can feel that way. But I actually certainly love the Flick of the Switch album, and I even find some things on the Fly on the Wall album that are worthwhile. And I like the fact that the band is younger and a little more energetic then. And at this point in their career, we're getting a veteran hard rock act that is kind of entering into the working retirement era of their career, if you will, where the time in between records is going to get wider, right? 6 years and then 8 years. So they're going to make less music, and they're basically semi-retired. They're going to be a touring nostalgia act, if you will. So they're in the business of selling concert tickets and not so much, selling records, right? Although I think these records sold respectably, but, so Ball Breaker comes in 1995 on the heels of their, it was either 91 or 92, I can't quite recall, Razor's Edge album, which was a giant comeback for them after they survived the 80s. This Razor's Edge album, of course, had Thunderstruck on it, which was a giant hit. The album, I think, went platinum a few times. I think it sold like 5-6 million copies. Just spitballing, that could be wrong, but it was a huge success for them and gave them their biggest album since Back in Black. And so now they have to have the challenge of following that up, and they choose to work with AC/DC fan, AC/DC super fan, and super producer Rick Rubin on the follow-up. And to those of us who followed Rick Rubin's career, this seems like a match made in heaven, because Rubin has made every one of his rock acts on his label sound like AC/DC, effectively. I'm looking at you, Danzig and The Cult, and that was what he did. He loved AC/DC. So it seems like, well, how could Rick Rubin screw up AC/DC? And of course, the AC/DC guys hated him. They didn't like the guy laying on the couch with his eyes closed, listening to music and telling them what was right and what was wrong. They didn't like doing a million Stanley Kubrick-like takes of every song. They didn't like spending an extraordinary amount of time just looking for a drum sound in a room that they knew wouldn't work. AC/DC at this point in their career had a pretty good idea of how to make a good sounding AC/DC record. And so this marriage didn't really work between Rick Rubin and AC/DC, in spite of it appearing so promising from the outset. So the record we got was Ball Breaker, and I can remember getting this and being super excited at the time and getting my copy on CD and being really underwhelmed by it. And that was probably the first time I was disappointed by a day one AC/DC purchase. I think sip of whiskey. I think across the board, my initial thoughts were, my number one thought was, holy hell, Brian Johnson's voice is thrashed. I mean, he had, to me, it was jarring how little range. He doesn't use any dynamics in his vocal, except for if you count maybe a spoken word part versus a screeched part. He didn't really, he attempts no high notes, no upper register stuff. It's kind of all in the same space, and it's hoarse and it's raspy. Listen to the Führer. Listen to the vocal performance on there. There's just nothing to his voice. It sounds very thin. So right off the bat, it's like, man, Brian Johnson's voice has completely finished its slow degradation over time, right? There's nothing left of his voice now. Just the brilliant performance simply 15 years earlier on Back in Black in 1980, where he shows all this range and these super glassy high parts that he hits, and in this he just had a great voice and just gave a Herculean performance on that record. And now 15 years later, it's like this thin, wispy, screechy thing that's just, there's nothing to it. And so that was striking. And the other thing was the guitars are like, I know AC/DC is not a band that plays with a lot of distortion, you know, like Malcolm more or less plays a clean tone, and just, but just plays super loud and gets his overdrive just through sheer volume. The you know, just old fashioned amp clipping, you know, and then Angus has just a touch, just a smidge of gain, you know, but, you know, maybe between 4 and 6, right, on the dial. So still very modest on the Marshall amp. So they're not a super gainy record, band in terms of how they record their guitars, but yet they still sound super powerful when they play together on the records. And on this record, the guitars are just like, there's no crunch to them. They're like really polite and kind of, it just doesn't sound like AC/DC. There's just very little power, save for a few tracks, to the guitars. They just sound very, just very light, almost like they're playing with no gain whatsoever, you know? So those are my thoughts. So it's, but it, the album does have a few decent songs, but I got to tell you, I mean, I think it's largely a forgettable record. The other one we're going to work with is Stiff Upper Lip, which came out 6 years later, and it suffers from the same problems. I think this is even a weaker record, although I think the highs are a little higher. But half the record is largely forgettable. The songwriting is really, and this is by AC/DC standards, the songwriting is really like, it feels like not a lot of effort was put into writing some of these songs. I'm looking at you, Come and Get It and Damned. And some of these are just dumb, even for AC/DC standards of dumb. That's another thing that I should mention about Ballbreaker, is that this is the second time they took all songwriting duties away from Brian Johnson with The Razor's Edge. So he doesn't write a single lyric anymore. And Ballbreaker is now the second time that Angus and Malcolm write all the lyrics. And they are, there's no cleverness to the lyrics whatsoever. Long gone are the clever Bon Scott street poetry lyrics that I loved in the 70s. There's no creativity, nothing clever. It just is. And these are middle-aged men at this point who sound like they're writing from the perspective of teenage boys. Embarrassingly bad lyrics on the Ballbreaker album. I'm looking at you, The Honey Roll, where they actually make the dad joke, honey roll over and lettuce on top, like lettuce on a sandwich. Get it? And the lyrics are bad on Stiff Upper Lip. They're bad on Ballbreaker. And so we are at new levels of kind of laziness and dumbness about the songwriting. Boy, how about airline food? Am I right? Honey, roll over and lettuce on top.
Oh, her hot potatoes will elevate you. Is this thing on?
It should be noted that stiff upper lip marked the return of Angus and Malcolm's brother, George Young, as producer, following Rick Rubin with Ballbreaker. The brothers Young decided to go back to the tried and true formula of having their brother George produce for them. This marked the first time he would do so since the classic 70s era Bon Scott records that the team of George Young and Harry Vanda produced. So the sound is, it's warm, and you'll notice in the Spotify playlist, as we alternate between Ballbreaker and Stiff Upper Lip songs, you'll notice that the songs from Stiff Upper Lip just have a little more sparkle to them, whereas the Ballbreaker songs sound a bit more compressed and have a little less life. But there are a few really good tracks on it, and like I said, I think the highs on Stiff Upper Lip are higher than the highs on Ballbreaker, but both albums are... they need this reanimation, because what I'm going to try to do, and here's the rules I'm going to outline, is I'm going to do 10 tracks. We're going to pick 5 from each, and I have to alternate them in sequencing. I'm going to attempt to sequence it like a good record and try to have some flow to it and some kind of like thought behind the sequencing. So I'm not just listing the damn songs. I'm making some attempt to order this thing, and we're going to create a better version. We're going to say, okay, AC/DC, instead of releasing these two records over this 6-year window, go ahead and wait a couple extra years and get be honest with yourself and edit some of these tracks out and cobble this batch of songs together into a better singular album. We're going to trim the fat.
Looking for a good rock and roll book? Do you watch a ton of rock and roll documentaries like I do? Well, that's why I started the Rock Talk Studio podcast, to be the place to go for previews, reviews, and recommendations of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies. Every first Tuesday of the month, the Rock Talk Studio gets you caught up on all the latest and points out where to go for the good stuff. Give me 20 minutes and I'll get you caught up on the world of rock and roll books, docs, and movies from every possible angle and leave you with a no-doubt decision on where to spend your time and money. Fan or just casual fan, or maybe you're on the fence and just looking for something new to check out, either way, I got you covered. Recently on the show, I've talked about books and documentaries from everyone and everything from David Bowie, Randy Rhoads, and the Allman Brothers, to the Abbey Road Studios, Cheap Trick, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Little Richard, and more. Join me, Big Rick, every Tuesday of the month as I host a Rock Talk Studio podcast, the ultimate review of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies.
Our Mind on Music is a podcast that covers all things music. We cover all genres, and we welcome all perspectives, from musicians, producers, and content creators to music enthusiasts. We have discussions, interviews, opinions, and much, much more. We hope you'll join us every week, Our Mind on Music, on YouTube and all streaming platforms.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
Be down as a rock.
So let's get started. I'm not going to say side one and side two and date myself. So we're just going to go with 10 tracks, and I am going to kick the record off with the title track from Stiff Upper Lip, and that will be track number one, Stiff Upper Lip. I actually like this song quite a bit. I think it's got some serious ZZ Top vibes to it. I love the riff that it opens with. Brian Johnson has what I would call modern Brian Johnson dynamics in his vocal, where he simply speaks the opening and then does his one note cat shrieking for the rest of it. But I still think this is a pretty good song and probably about the best one on the record. Stiff Upper Lip will kick off this AC/DC Rock and Roll Reanimator album. Track number two, we're going to bounce over to the Ball Breaker record, and probably the best song on that record. Well, maybe I like the title track better, but spoiler for later on. But let me take a sip of my whiskey here. I'm getting dry. All right. So track two will be Hail Caesar, which is kind of a cool song. It's kind of weird hearing AC/DC kind of singing about a historical event. You know, we're now talking about the assassination of Julius Caesar. I guess that's what it's about. I don't know if there's some kind of metaphor to it, but I digress. So track two, we will do Hail Caesar. It's got a pretty good riff to it. It's got a little breakdown in the middle. So AC/DC's uncharacteristically creative with the songwriting there a little bit as they do the little breakdown. It's got a nice solo from Angus in it. Hail Caesar. We're going to go with that for track two. I should mention that Ball Breaker was the first record that welcomed Phil Rudd back to the drum kit, and he's on Stiff Upper Lip as well. So again, should have been a comeback record, but didn't measure up from a songwriting perspective. Let's move on. Track three, I'm going to go with Hold Me Back from Stiff Upper Lip. It's got a little bit of a kind of a groovy feel. I like Brian Johnson's singing on this. It's a little more understated. It's a fun song. I think it breaks up the pace of the record a little bit here at track three. Angus has a cool little, like, I don't know if it's like a hammer-on kind of thing he's doing, this little melodic guitar line that kind of runs through it and gives it a little bit of color. I like this track quite a bit. So we're going to do that one for track three. Let's go back over to the Ball Breaker record, and this is a strange song, but I dig it because it's got that classic AC/DC feel with the chords ringing out. They've got the Malcolm Young, you know, tone in place with those opening chords, and then this the thump 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 of Cliff Williams' bass as he just kind of pedals behind it in a very traditional AC/DC song arrangement here. So I like that quite a bit. It feels very 70s to me. The subject matter, really fucking weird, man. Again, it's like, anybody remember David Koresh and the Waco, Texas kind of thing that happened in the 90s? And it was a little bit of a political hot potato for the Clintons and I think Janet Reno at the time. And AC/DC writes a song about that. I mean, I don't understand it, but we'll take it. So we'll go with that for track four, Burning Alive. Track five, back over to the Stiff Upper Lip record, and I'm going to go with Can't Stand Still, another kind of bluesy, shuffling kind of track. It's a little more mellow again. A lot of these songs on Stiff Upper Lip are kind of mellow, but I like it here as a change of pace, kind of in the middle of our track listing. And I like this song quite a bit. I think the first half of the Stiff Upper Lip record, where this album sits, is the strongest half. The album turns to straight steaming garbage in the second half. Track number six on our Rock and Roll Reanimator AC/DC record is going to be Boogeyman. Yeah, it's this bluesy kind of Brian Johnson's trying to be kind of sinister at the beginning, adopting this character of this sleazy night-dwelling boogeyman character. I don't know whether he's a pimp or what, judging by the lyrics, but... And then, of course, he quickly gives way to his screeching vocal, but it's a pretty cool track. I like the guitar playing on it. It's very bluesy again. We'll go with Boogeyman as our change of pace bluesy track there. And then for track 7, we will do Satellite Blues, which is an up-tempo rocker. It's got a pretty good chorus off of Stiff Upper Lip. I think it was a single as well. They did a pretty neat video for it. The videos around this time were pretty good, actually. The Stiff Upper Lip video was kind of cool. I really liked the Safe in New York City video with all the police cars and stuff. Pretty cool stuff. So the videos that supported this record were pretty good. Too bad the rest of the record was not. But we'll go with Satellite Blues as track number 7. Track number 8 is, I'm going to pick Hard as a Rock, the lead single off of the Ballbreaker record. One thing about all these Ballbreaker songs is they all have like these little dainty, quiet kind of intros before they get loud. And this one has a pretty simple guitar motif that I think any beginner guitarist can figure out on his or her own, but it works. That's what AC/DC does. And then it slams into the main riff, which is this kind of thundering riff that everybody remembers when it was a single. And then the chorus, Hard as a Rock. It sounds like a Ford truck commercial in a way. It's kind of embarrassing in that sense. The lyrics themselves are pretty embarrassing. At one point, Brian Johnson is singing a line about her hot potatoes. I mean, the food lyrics that are on the Ballbreaker record between the honey roll and Hard as a Rock. And of course, it's just a song about having a raging boner. You know, I mean, this is not super intellectual stuff. I mean, Stiff Upper Lip, you know, like they said it was about Elvis Presley having the curled up lip, but I think it's probably about a stiffy up her lip. At any rate, Hard as a Rock will be track number 8. Now we're closing out this record, and I wanted to pick up the tempo a little bit. I wanted to close it out strong. So I'm going to go over to the Stiff Upper Lip record, and I'm going to pick the track Safe in New York City, which is this, it's a riff we've heard AC/DC kind of recycle many times in their catalog. They did this riff again in the latest album, Power Up, on the Demon Fire track. But here we get this riff on the Safe in New York City song, and it's a pretty cool kind of beating around the bush to reference the Bon Scott era Highway to Hell album kind of riff. Pretty good track. Again, the lyrics are kind of weird considering this came out in 2001 after 9/11, and they're singing a song called Safe in New York City about, like, you know, being in New York, you could get mugged, you know, the city's kind of dangerous. And it just felt kind of weird to put a song like that out in 2001, but whatever, it's AC/DC. I don't know, maybe they don't think about this kind of stuff, but lyrics across the board on these two records are really, really bad. Let's close the record out. We'll close it out with what I think is the probably the best track off the Ballbreaker record. It's certainly the heaviest track. It's a song they've played live a few times, and it is the title cut, Ballbreaker. So it's Brian, I think, actually sounds great on this track. It's his, I think, best vocal performance on a record when he has virtually no voice left. I think it's a strong closing track. It closes the Ballbreaker album as well. It has kind of an epic feel to it. And so, and Angus is playing on it. His guitar solo is just, he's on fire on this track. So I love Angus's guitar playing. I love his lead playing. I think the guy he has just great vibrato. And I just love his playing when he really lets it loose. And he does on this track. So that would be my rock and roll reanimator of the Stiff Upper Lip Ballbreaker albums. To review, it's track 1, Stiff Upper Lip, track 2, Hail Caesar, track 3, Hold Me Back, track 4, Burning Alive, track 5, Can't Stand Still, track 6, Boogeyman, track 7, Satellite Blues, track 8, Hard as a Rock, track 9, Safe in New York City, and track 10, the thundering track, Ballbreaker, which I think is a track about SNM and a woman who's going to entertain her submissive man by using various gadgetry on his ball sack. Oh, poetry, poetry, poetry. So what the hell are we going to call this thing? We got to name this record so that I have something I can call the playlist that I will accompany the release with on Spotify. We're going to call it Stiff Upper Balls. AC/DC Stiff Upper Balls will be the playlist that I put up on Spotify, so you too can listen to this reworked, reimagined version of Ball Breaker and Stiff Upper Lip. All right, gang, this has been Rock and Roll Autopsy. We'll get back to our regularly scheduled programming next week. Thanks for tuning in. Good night now.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mystique. There's no mystique anymore.
To the dawn, love it, to the morning, I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNR Autopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Before you go, if you like heavy metal and stories, then you'll love Battle of the Bands, the narrative form metal podcast that unpacks the biggest rivalries in rock and metal history. Season 1 took in Megadeth versus Metallica, and Season 2 went across the divide to explore the beef between Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. It's like Business Wars, but metal. Find Battle of the Bands wherever you listen to your podcasts, or visit battleofthebandspod.com.